10:09 on a Monday morning. I'm David Gustina, not Joe Donahue. And no, you don't have to stop pledging. Just because an hour went by where they were pitching the lockbox, it doesn't mean you can't still get in at WAMC.org. And why not honor the folks on the roundtable panel this morning? We're about to get underway. Ulster County Comptroller and former president and CEO of the Community Foundations of the Hudson Valley. That's Marge Gallagher. She is here. Are you, you got everything out of your system yet?
I'm good. I got everything out of my system. I drove my lockbox donation up here, and it was very satisfying because the last time I was on the air, I was saying lockbox doesn't give me the same thrill of meeting a challenge, but today it did.
You see, we managed to meet the goal and meet her expectations. It's what about you, Jim Ketterer? Are you feeling good today, Senior Fellow, Bard Center for Civic Engagement?
Good morning. I'm feeling good, and I just want to reiterate something I've said before, but it remains true, and that is I've lived in countries where the media is controlled by governments, where access to information is highly constrained, and when that happens, it is very hard to put it back together again. And when it happens, then the vacuum is filled by conspiracy theories and propaganda and, you know, really bad outcomes on so many levels. So don't take it for granted. Don't take WAMC for granted. And please support the station.
Couldn't have said it better myself. WAMC.org. Thanks for that, Jim. And, of course, last but not least, our friend and yours, political consultant and lobbyist Libby Post. She had some things to get off her chest earlier, and she did.
And I did, and I promise I won't curse on the air.
You won't.
Your license is at stake. I can't do that.
Well, and you know, that's an important thing.
Yes.
And one of the things about the public airways is that they're protected by the Federal Communications
right.
Commission, unlike commercial press, where they can do and say whatever they want.
Right.
And at the same time, we want to protect things that we should be able to say over the air, like using the word abortion,
right.
for example,
right.
which, you know, and you talk, Jim, about other countries and what's possible to say over the air and what's not. So the value of information, even in our society now, is being challenged by social media and the internet. And knowing what's viable is very important. Having a press that we can agree is telling the truth is something we're losing sight of. It seems, in my opinion, many ways slipping away. But if we keep WAMC, we're mm-hmm. going to keep that practice of the journalism of verification alive. And that's what we need to have a democracy.
And don't think it can't happen here.
Oh.
Right? I mean, people are, we're a democracy, we're this, we're that. I'm sorry. If the Orange Menace is reelected, we will be under lockdown. Women will be chattel. Lesbians and gays will be sent to an island somewhere. I mean, we're going to go back to pre-1950s, and he'll start revoking FCC licenses.
Right. I think that's
he'll
the way it
start.
Would work.
He'll get rid of. I mean, he wants to like discombobulate federal government, get rid of civil service, put all of his cronies in, all that sort of stuff. Folks, don't think that this can't happen. We're on a precipice here, and while our roots in democracy are strong, when a poison is put into roots, that's when it goes.
Well, and when it comes to journalism, it's the model for paying
right.
for it.
Right.
And the one thing that's taken a huge hit, especially in commercial broadcasting, is advertising, newspapers, of course, is advertising. But here in public broadcasting, our underwriting has taken a hit. And we have to be forthcoming about that. I mean, the difference in many ways is going to be made up by our audience. We're going to need them to be with us if we are going to keep at least this network on the air and hopefully speaking truth to power. At the same time, we're giving you viable information so that you can make the decisions for your own lives. And that's what a great public radio station should do. WAMC.org, just like this panel where we discuss the important information of the day. You can react to that by emailing us at panel@WAMC.org. I'm David Gustina here with Marge Gallagher, Jim Ketterer, and Libby Post. And we got a first in Mexico. rubbing my eyes this morning looking at the news. Claudia Sheinbaum elected Mexico's first female president. This, I believe, is the New York Times. Claudia Sheinbaum, in a landslide on Sunday, won the Mexico election. An official quick count of votes showed, cementing the dominance of the left-leaning Morena movement that over the past 6 years has upended the country's political establishment. Her victory stunned an opposition that's accused Morena of weakening the country's democratic institutions. The former Mexico City mayor led with more than 58% of the vote that was released by the National Electoral Institute. Her triumph ensures another 6 years in power for Morena, founded 13 years ago by President Andrés Manuel López Obrador, a charismatic leader who has emphasized helping the poor. Mexican voters on Sunday elected Claudia Sheinbaum the first country's female president. The 61-year-old engineer succeeds her political mentor following a campaign marred by violence. And let's get into it now, folks. I don't know who wants to take this first. Perhaps one of the women on the panel would like to speak.
I'm happy to
jump in.
I mean, it's a joyful occasion to see a woman and to see a woman with a Jewish last name, honestly, become president of Mexico. That was thrilling, but it also really shook my confidence in my own country. Why has it taken us so long? We've never had a woman president in the United States. And furthermore, the way her opponents graciously conceded, okay, the race to her and acknowledged that she had won, really struck me as something important, especially in this day and age in the United States, where I think if we see a Trump loss in this coming election, there's not going to be a good concession. So it really made me think about where we are as a country. And furthermore, a lot of their policies to support and facilitate aid to the most impoverished Mexicans, including tripling the minimum wage and investing in, you know, the state oil company, et cetera, has really made an impact. And I think we do need to take that into consideration here, that we're leaving a lot of people behind. And that's why there's so much unhappiness on both sides of both parties. But a happy day, but one that makes me question, are we as good as Mexico?
Libby.
Well, I think it's great that Mexico, in such a country dominated by machismo, I mean, you know, not that it's necessarily bad, but it hasn't been great for women. You know, they've elected overwhelmingly. There's not a question here. There's no, you know, it's like 58%. She beat somebody 2-1, right? Because I think there were three people in the race.
And the male got the least votes, I believe.
Yeah, right. Yeah. There were two women and a man, and the guy got the least votes. And, you know, so we have now a Jewish woman of Mexican descent, the president of Mexico. And
whose family escaped Nazi persecution.
There
Atheist,
you go.
Atheist, non-practicing.
Well,
right.
You know, there are plenty of Jews I know who are atheists, but they still identify as Jews. They still respond to the anti-Semitism. They still understand what it means to be a Jew in this society, in this world, and what we're targeted with. However, you know, the fact is that she is Jewish. She's a woman. It's Mexico. It sends a message to the rest of the world. Now, we have to see how it goes, right? That's the thing, because there were, you know, oh, what about the cartels? What about this? You know, some people are saying it's the deterioration of democracy, not because of her, but because of what the party stood for. You know, it's a little bit like the messaging that came out of Venezuela when the socialists got elected there, and that was not a good thing. That did not go well. So hopefully it will go better here. What they need to do, really, is make sure that the cartels don't get any further, that they really take the time and put the resources in to fighting the drug trade, getting people more resources so they stay, have good paying jobs, all of that sort of stuff. That's what needs to happen there. But it's exciting, and it's a great kickoff to the week, that's for sure. And it's something I'd never thought I'd ever hear anybody say, that a Jewish woman is now the president of Mexico.
You are listening to the Roundtable panel on WAMC. That was Libby Post. We're here today with Jim Ketterer and March Gallagher. And, you know, I just want to point out that, you know, you mentioned, March, that, you know, the idea that we could see some violence possibly with this coming election in America in November, depending on who wins or loses. But there is quite a bit of violence in Mexico, certainly mm-hmm. surrounding their elections. And one of the other things I thought of was she doesn't take over till October.
Yeah.
Right. What happens right. between now and then?
I read that hundreds of candidates and the family members have been killed at various levels of races, and that's absolutely terrifying.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's
a scary time to be an elected official in the United States, but I can't even imagine doing it in Mexico.
Right, and can she make it to October was my thought. Not that maybe she's protected, but I don't know. But Jim?
Well, in your run-up to us talking about this, you said that this is a leftist candidate. And I think we should be careful in thinking that this is, you know, kind of a great moment for progressive politics in Mexico. And though it's true what Mark said, that there has been, you know, payments to the people who have been left out of economic gains. There has been attempts to prop up, and probably not so far successful attempts to prop up, the state-owned oil company. At the same time, the attack on democratic institutions under her predecessor, who is her mentor and who probably will still in many ways dominate the political scene, that's a real concern for many Mexicans, many in the region, and many in Washington. There is I think NAFTA is coming up for reapproval in 2026, so that's going to be during her term. We'll see who the president of the United States will be at the time, but that's a big issue. There's the immigration issue. There's the violence issue that you talked about. So to what extent, when she does finally take office in October, can she start to carve out her own area of power and exercise that power without just being under the thumb of AMLO, the president, who is the outgoing president? Now, he's a sort of a major figure in terms of charisma and folksy charm and all of that. She's very different kind of political personality. She's a scientist.
She's of the elite class.
Yeah, she has been a very successful academic. She was on a panel that won a Nobel Prize. And she was the mayor of Mexico City, one of the largest cities in the world. And I think being the mayor of any municipality is a really, really tough job. And by many accounts, she was successful. So this is, you know, the ultimate job in the country. It, as Libby said, it remains to be seen if she can really do it and really meet these challenges. One of the other challenges is immigration, that Mexico... Yeah. Not only hemorrhaging its own citizens, but being a venue for people coming from other places and going through Mexico on the way to the United States, that and the cartels and the other things. These are, you know, very destabilizing issues. So her work is really cut out for her. There's a long kind of span until she takes over, and there's a lot that might happen. I would just say, too, we've talked on the air before on this program about the value of term limits or not. Mm. And so there are term limits in Mexico. It's at the core.
It's one term.
Right, one term. And it's really at the core of their political system. And so the one term really kind of skews the system in a way so that someone like AMLO will try to find somebody who's going to continue to do his work even though he can no longer stay in power. Their party also appears to be winning the legislature, and so much so that they'll be able to alter the Constitution, which worries people and also worries them about the state of the judiciary going forward. So there's a lot in the mix.
That's what I was going to say. I am concerned about what I've read about the Supreme Court there. They want to replace the Supreme Court. Her mentor wanted to replace the Supreme Court with elected Supreme Court members. I think that's concerning. And also, it's a six-year term. So it's a longer term than what we have in the United States. And you really just think about it. If we had had Trump for 6 years, where would we be today? Right? That's a long time. You can really change the course of an entire reality in 6 years.
And
really,
you know you're not going to have to run again. So you can let it rip.
I'm not a fan of one-party rule. I don't think it's the best for a country. I don't think it's the best for a state. I don't think it's the best for a county, or the best for a town. Just sort of looking at all these different layers of government that we have, and it's probably not the best for Mexico because it just allows a decision that doesn't really include all viewpoints, and especially when there's a minority viewpoint that's looking to protect democracy, I'm concerned that that gets left to the side.
Yeah, it's like a check and balance.
Exactly.
Well, and they had another party that dominated Mexican politics for decades, the PRI.
It was disastrous.
For all the reasons that you just mentioned.
Yeah.
Well, how about this from Arabella, who writes into the panel this morning, we would have had a woman president if it weren't for the Electoral College.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
So I don't know how we don't think about what would have happened if Hillary Clinton had won that election and what might be different.
I mean, there's a lot of moments to cast blame in what happened in the, you know, Hillary versus Donald race. So I don't know that I would just blame the Electoral College, because we did have Comey, you know, in the weeks before the election, right? I mean, we had a lot of other things kind of leading up to that. So I'm not ready to throw away the Electoral College. I think about it a lot, something that is concerning, but there were a lot of other factors here, including, by the way, what we just saw this 34-count conviction on, right, which is hiding information that might have been critical to the voters at an important time. So, yeah.
Well, and then the latest now, if we're going to be talking about Hillary Clinton, that the former President Trump now says he never called to lock her up.
Yeah, right. I mean, okay, let's just get the footage from the rally.
The rally.
It was AI.
Oh, that wasn't me. Right. That wasn't me. That was my stand-in. I mean, he's just a lying, lying liar, as Alan used to say, right? A lying, lying liar.
A lying liar.
I mean, he's just, he's disgusting, and will do anything. He will do anything to get reelected, which means, folks, we have to be on our toes. And it also means we can't stay home on election day, and we can't let all the other issues that make us angry about Joe Biden get in the way. Because let me put it to you this way. If Trump gets reelected, we will be sending more military. We will be sending our boys over and girls over to Israel. We will be engaged in a war in the Middle East that will blow up the entire world, because that's Trump. And he and Bibi are made from the same cloth. And they are allies in all of this. And so if you don't like what Biden's doing with the Middle East, you stay home, Trump gets elected, it's going to be 10 to 15 to 20 times worse.
Actually, I have the opposite concern, at least about other parts of the world, that a Trump administration 2.0 would be isolationist, and that we would withdraw from NATO, that we would allow Ukraine to be overrun, that there would, goodness only knows what would happen with Taiwan. And
yes, but when it comes to Israel, remember, he moved the embassy to Jerusalem, right? He and Bibi are the same person, one's Jewish and one's not. And so, but they both are beholden to the ultra-right in their countries and the religious right in their countries.
But he's also indicated just what you said, Jim, that he would leave Russia alone, basically.
Yeah, right.
Let them do what they
care
want.
About Russia.
Encourage
he doesn't care
Russia.
About the rest of the world.
Well,
but let's not forget his son-in-law and daughter are now our Orthodox Jews.
Panel at WAMC.org.
Yes. Happy day.
Can I go back to Mexico for a second?
Absolutely.
To say one of the things that I think is really interesting is that the national sentiment of people in Mexico has really improved. Their confidence in government doubled in the last 5 years under this president. I don't know what it really takes to do that. Maybe it's tripling the minimum wage, as I mentioned before, but that's really twice the confidence in the United States government right now. And, you know, they've seen a marked improvement and turnaround in 5 years. That's kind of amazing.
That is amazing. Well, and it rings clear when you say it was a peaceful transference of power, and that all the opponents there in Mexico said, congratulations, you know, you're the winner.
Do you think if Biden is a 58% winner, or even 60%, which is now also what they're saying about this race in Mexico, could be as high as 60%, we're going to see a peaceful transfer of power? I don't think so.
I think the scene is already being set to not see a peaceful transfer of power. By the way, I even saw a sign that said, lock Biden up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So. Well, they might be talking about the sun, but
yes.
Who knows?
Yes, I'm sure they are. You can write to us at panel@wamc.org. I'm David Gesina here with March Gallagher, Jim Ketterer, and Libby Post. And we are trying to have a little panel here. And while we're at it,
a little mini panel
from 10 to 11. And we have a writer here who wrote into us who wants us to change topics. And it may be time to do just that.
we only have a half an hour left.
Do they have a suggestion? What topic?
Yeah, what do they want to talk about?
They do. They said, please discuss, because it's on our list, how about that, the fact that the GOP is pushing for the cult of Trump without calling it that. And Republicans in Congress, this from the Associated Press, are embracing Donald Trump's strategy of blaming the U.S. justice system after his historic guilty verdict. They're also enlisting themselves in his campaign of vengeance and political retribution. It's all part of the GOP bid to reclaim the White House. On Friday, the House Judiciary Chairman demanded the prosecutors in the New York hush money case appear for questioning. Republicans who expressed doubts about Trump's innocence or political viability were instantly bullied to stay silent or told to, quote, leave the party, end quote. President Joe Biden said the attacks on the justice system are reckless and irresponsible. Experts on authoritarianism warn that Trump is vowing to use the state against his opponents. We do have to take a break, don't we, Mike? Okay, well, I want you to think about that for a second. The justice system, did it work in this case? Was it the trial fair or not? Now, I saw a poll that said 50% of the American people think it was fair and 50% think it was not.
Was it a flat 50-50 or was there undecided?
I didn't see that. I actually saw 50-50, but we'll talk more about that after the beep. Little Spyro Gyra, 10:34 on a Monday morning, and you're listening to the Roundtable Panel. I'm David Gustin. Of course, our playlist is posted online at wamc.org/roundtable. We're talking serious issues with our panel today. The Ulster County Comptroller and the former president and CEO of the Community Foundations of the Hudson Valley, March Gallagher, is here. Jim Ketterer, senior fellow, Bard Center for Civic Engagement, and political consultant and lobbyist, Libby Post. And we had a request for us to discuss this very topic. We previewed it. I'll give you a little preview it here, and then we'll go into the discussion. After Trump's conviction, many Republicans fall in line by criticizing the trial. Rather than expressing confidence in the judicial system, many Republicans echo Trump's criticisms and claims of political persecution over his hush money trial. It dawns on me, guys, you know, that there were all these things back in my day, mm-hmm. Get my cane out. Back in my day, if you didn't serve in the military, that was a liability of you getting a chance at becoming the president. If you were involved in any unscrupulous activity, think Gary Hart and the affair. Come
Howard
on,
Howard Dean.
Howard Dean yelled wrong at a rally. He yelled at a rally. Can you believe he yelled at a rally? You don't have to play it, Mike. We got it though. We got it on tape. And then he's gone. Like, all these things that could trip you up along the road to the presidency, he set a new standard. He literally set a new standard.
Well, he's lowered the standard.
And we're seeing here now that a plurality of Americans, 50%, think former President Donald Trump's guilty verdict on all 34 counts in his hush money trial was correct. 49% think he should end his campaign. 19% think he didn't do anything wrong. And the 31% is the core MAGA group that is still behind him. Of course, there's all this false information going around about the trial and its being biased against the former president. Many have acknowledged that a regular person for this kind of a situation wouldn't perhaps receive this wouldn't be as big a deal, but this is about obfuscating who you are when you're trying to win a presidential election. So there we are, and now we're watching Republicans show up.
It's amazing.
Show up in a court and stand by someone who's now been criminally indicted, convicted.
I mean, I think it was Susan Collins is saying, I was shocked that she said, oh, this was a travesty of justice. But Lisa Murkowski is standing by her commitment against Trump. But, you know, these people, this just shows what the Republican Party is really about. It's not It's about fascism these days now, because they are questioning the validity of the courts, and that's, you know, one of the roads down to a fascist state is saying the courts don't have power, that judges don't have power, the laws don't matter. It's our interpretation that is all that matters. And that's what's happening here.
But
and
don't you think that's winning at its base? It's about winning.
Oh, yeah.
And they're just
going to
stick
yes.
with the person who's yes. going to get
them,
closest to winning.
You know, what it's really about for them is outlawing abortion everywhere, right? That's what it's really about.
If they win.
Right. If they win, it's about outlawing abortion throughout the country. It's about taking away people's rights, LGBTQ people, people of color. They will pass a law totally obfuscating everything that that President Johnson did. We were in San Antonio, we went to Austin, we went to the LBJ Library. In 5 years, other than the war on Vietnam, which was not a high point, but in his 5 years as president, he passed more consequential legislation than FDR even did. And they want to see all of that turned on its head. And the Supreme Court, Trump's Supreme Court, saying, oh, everything's okay with the Voting Rights Act. We don't have to worry about it anymore, right, was the beginning of that. And so they just want to turn this country back. And we can't let that happen.
The way they seem to be going about it, though, is denigrating our institutions
yes,
that
right.
have That's... engendered a lot of faith over the years. And if we don't have faith, for example, in our justice system, you can't have a society that functions well under those conditions.
Yeah, we were just talking about the attack on institutions in Mexico, and we see this worldwide trend.
Yeah.
And the United States is not immune to this trend. In fact, might be leading it in, mm-hmm. in some ways. And the attack on institutions, the damage that that does, is something that will be very hard to undo if it gets too serious. There's a certain line past which it's almost impossible to put these institutions back together yeah. without just a complete right. collapse. And I was saying before, I've worked in countries where there's been constraints on the media. I've also worked in countries where they've had a complete collapse of their political system. And that's not a pretty thing to see up close. And for anybody who is thinking that's a good idea, that's what we need to do, they ought to take a good hard look at some of the other examples in the last several decades that we've seen around the world and see just the human cost to it as well as the political and financial cost. It is immense, and it takes decades to reverse. And so people really need to think long and hard about the direction that we're going because, as Libby said, it could happen here.
Well, I think Speaker Johnson's comments indicate that we may be over the line already, Jim, because he said, quote, I think that the justices on the court, meaning the Supreme Court, that dash, I know many of them personally, I think they are deeply concerned. To me, that statement by Speaker Johnson is the most troubling thing that I've read about the verdict, because to me, that tells me that he is in day-to-day conversation with Supreme Court judges, justices, who may have to make decisions about incredibly important constitutional issues. Now, we know that it's very unlikely that this case in New York should not wind up on the Supreme Court docket because of the way appeals will work on a criminal conviction in New York will be through New York's court system. But that, to me, is very concerning, that you have the Speaker of the House publicly acknowledging that he is in day-to-day conversation with Supreme Court justices about the way these things should go. I'm really concerned about it. And I don't think this is going to end with Trump. I've got bad news for everybody. This right. MAGA effort, the people that have really been drawn to it, especially in leadership, they are not going to go away if Trump has mm-hmm. a stroke tomorrow. We are on a very dangerous course here. We may be over the line that you just talked about where it's too far gone. And I'm scared. I'll just speak honestly.
Well,
I'm scared. Let me say one
yeah,
other
sure,
thing.
Sure.
I see the attack on institutions at every level. I see it in government in New York. And I see elected officials like myself taking positions on actions that other officials have in their regular day-to-day job capacity as judges, as elected sheriffs, or what have you, and criticizing them in a way that I don't think we would have done 20 years ago. So I think this infective sort of approach to denigrating your institutions is maybe going to happen in Mexico. It is happening in the United States. It's happening with the speaker, and it's happening at the local level.
And it's and you're so right that it's not just limited to Donald Trump. I mean, this started before Trump came on the scene. Mm-hmm. It's likely to continue after he leaves the scene in whatever fashion. And it's not just the race for president. I mean, we see contestation even at, you know, the level of like library boards, mm-hmm. school boards, election officials that are so critically important on the state level, because our presidential elections are basically a series of parallel state level elections. And so this is, you know, this is something that people need to pay attention to. We have a long history of people not turning out for local elections, not paying attention to them. Our turnout rate is very, very pathetically low in many cases. That, you know, that's very dangerous in and of itself, and even more so when the institutions are under attack.
And so, folks, just so you know, there's a primary on June 25th.
Right.
Right? And, you know, some places are Democratic primaries, some places are Republican primaries. But there's a primary on Tuesday, June 25th. Early voting starts on Saturday the 15th, and it runs through Sunday the 23rd. If you don't know where your early voting is, go to your local county board of elections website. Everything will be there. But voting is really important. And locally, you know, there was a really hotly contested library board race, mm-hmm. in Bethlehem. And Gail Sacco, who was the recently retired library director in Voorheesville, she was there for over 35 years, got elected to the Bethlehem Library Board. And so the good people, when you stand up and speak out and you do a campaign and you bring your message on a local level, you know, good things can happen.
It'd be nice to see those numbers up, wouldn't it, though?
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, you go in, there's few hundred people that have come to the election.
Gail won with, like, over 1,100 votes.
That's good.
It was incredible. She was the top vote getter, and it was a crowded field of five or six candidates, yeah. running for library board.
You know, library can be so contentious in the town, yeah. of Woodstock. You know, they wanted to move the library out of the old, you know, historic building that is basically crumbling into the ground.
That's
and
right.
It was a process filled with hate and vitriol, and yeah. that's really what I'm talking about. It's fine to have a different position. Okay, we used to disagree on the floor of the legislature, wherever it was,
and
then
drinks.
We would go for a drink,
yeah.
afterwards, and we would, for the most part, speak with respect to our opponents, and if we wanted something to be said in a nasty way, we'd find a third party to do it. We wouldn't
do
it ourselves.
Right, yeah. right.
Now we do it ourselves, openly.
Right.
You know, I have worked on projects around the world with parliaments, and this was particularly in the first years after 9/11. When I was at SUNY, and we were working with parliaments in places where they hadn't really played a role in the governance of the country, and they were trying to do so. And one of the most difficult things to inculcate was exactly what you just talked about, March, was this sense of loyal opposition, that you could disagree on policies, even, you know, really adamantly disagree on policies, but you were still loyal to the country. You still supported
right.
the Constitution. Now, I see on a daily basis, people saying, if you don't agree with me, it's not just that you don't agree. It's not just that perhaps you're wrong. You're a bad person. And in fact, you might be a traitor. You might be a danger to the country. And then once you go down that path, you can justify doing all kinds of things if you think that your opponents are evil, if they are a traitor. That's very dangerous.
And it's hard to get that back at all.
Yeah,
once
loyal
you've just
opposition
made that decision.
Is a very tough concept to hold on to.
We need to take a quick little break. We'll be right back. And we're going to continue the discussion, and then we're going to hear from Jacqueline, who's written into the panel. You know, if we just played this music throughout the land, people would relax. They'd take a deep breath, and they might not fight so much. But we are where we are right now in this country, and people aren't happy, including Jacqueline, who wrote, "I am so disgusted by the comments made by Republicans over the Trump trial. If it's not something that he should have been charged with, why are there laws that cover these actions? If he wasn't guilty, why did 12 jurors all decide he was guilty? A travesty of justice? I think not." But that's exactly what not only the Republicans, some of the key lawmakers in our country, but even a network, Fox, has been pushing. And they speak to a large portion of the American people. And when you're party loyal and you just trust just what the party says, you can then understand why people think, oh, it's rigged, the judge was against him, it's just one more example of the Democrats trying to stop him
leader.
From...
It's the supreme leader. It's like all the bad science fiction we saw as kids. It's the supreme leader. It's what happened in Germany. It's what happened in Italy during the war. It's Mussolini, it's Hitler, it's we will follow you blindly.
Oh, I want to know how you try someone when they've done something, if you just got to let them run for the election. In other words, the idea is that it's an election interference. Well, he's already got two cases postponed.
Right.
He's an American citizen. Is he above the law? Should he be able to be tried?
Right. And the thing is that we don't let felons serve in the Army. Why are we going to let a felon serve in the White House?
So, but what if a felon just ran for president? Could they then have their case? Or a person who's accused of a crime, could they just run for president and say, well, now you can't hold the trial?
All right, guys, I have to speak for the other side for a minute here, okay?
There's another side?
Yes, there is another side. This is a case of first impression. Okay, so we can say like, oh, anyone would have received this treatment, but you know, this was a complex legal argument that the falsification of business records was a felony because it was in order to commit another crime.
Right.
Okay, and that's kind of a deep thing, and this has never been done before, especially not with a presidential candidate. A lot of people feel like it was. Because he was Donald Trump, this case was brought. And I think part of that narrative is spun even worse because this is the case that rose to the top. This is the case that went forward when there are actually much more serious cases against him that I would have liked to see happening now. And then I also think that people's opinion is going to change depending on the sentencing. Sentencing is really going to matter here. If Judge Merchan comes and says that the sentence should be a prison sentence, we are going to see violence potentially before the election. If it is, you know, more of a probation, you know, with a penalty situation, and I haven't looked at what all the potential range of sentences are here, I think that will change it. I think Trump supporters will decry it no matter what it is. I do want to say I think the judge here did an excellent job under incredibly challenging circumstances. It really looks like his disposition throughout the trial, the way he handled things, is going to insulate the case from certain types of appeals, which is great. But I do see the other side saying, like, why are you bringing this case? Why are you bringing this case now? Why are you bringing this unique type of case that's never been brought before? You're bringing it because you don't like my candidate for president. And really, that's not the reason. The reason is that Trump is a criminal in six ways from Sunday, and this just happens to be the case that he wasn't able to stop.
Right. And I would say, why are we delaying the case out of Florida, Ms. Cannon, who was appointed by Trump? I mean, come on.
Right. All these cases should have moved more quickly. And we should have dispositions in them all, preferably.
Now, you were talking about the Supreme Court march, and my feeling is the line gets erased when they decide on immunity. If they decide he's immune, where is America?
Exactly. Right. And then why wouldn't Biden take the steps that Trump says he's going to take, the retributive, you know, potentially, you know, executing somebody on Fifth Avenue approach to governing? So... yeah, it's a very scary time, and that's why I was saying earlier, to Jim's point, that I think we may have crossed the line. I don't know.
You know, this case is not, from everything I've read, is not that appealable because the judge knew what he was doing and followed the law. And the only thing they can appeal on, from what I understand, and I'm not a lawyer, is the jury instructions, but even that was written narrowly. But the thing is this. It'll go to the appellate division in New York City, and I've seen some pictures of all, and it's five black women, I think, are on the appellate division in New York City, all Supreme Court justices, and then they get bumped up to the appellate division to hear these appeals. And then if they say, oh, sure, you can appeal it, it'll go to the Court of Appeals, you know, in New York State. And so I'm not saying that the fix is in there either, but the fact of the matter is that the judge in this case, Merchan, really seemed to know how to craft his messaging to the jury as well as keep everyone in line in terms of, you know, everybody objecting to everything in under the sun, so that there's not a lot here that can be appealed. And, you know, and that's what they're going to say is rigged, right? Oh, I'm sorry, but the justice system is working the way it should be, but not to your liking. So that's rigged? No, that's the justice system. Not everybody likes the outcomes of every single case.
And it's always rigged unless it's in our favor.
Right, right. That's exactly it. It's always that way. You know, that's his thing.
The point that the case would not have been brought if it wasn't Donald Trump may very well be true, because in this case, Donald Trump falsified business records for the purpose of being able to win the presidency. And that's never happened before. You know, so I think that there is a grain of truth to that argument. And it actually underscores and is the foundation to the entire case.
Right. But it's white collar crime. And so white collar crime is able to be prosecuted. If I did what he did, I would be in trouble. It's just that simple. Any business person who did what he did, you know,
you'd end up
so
being
blatantly
a bit disgraced.
Yeah.
I think it's a little less judgmental these days, but it would not be good for
you.
No.
I mean, they did this because of the Access Hollywood story. It's, you know, all you have to do is connect the dots.
People rallying around him is really concerning, and seeing, you know, my conservative friends on social media sharing memes that they didn't create, that just sort of buy into the whole narrative without even asking.
But
a
the
question.
Kind of people that are rallying around him, Mike Johnson, major Christian right figures, all of these folks, you know, they rail against sexual immorality. And here they are standing behind a guy who admitted to grabbing women by their genitals, has been convicted in civil court with the Jean Carroll case. And I don't think it was criminal, but I think it was civil court, you know.
Which was sexual assault.
Sexual assault. And then this. And then this. And Stormy Daniels.
Karen McDougal. Did you say Karen McDougal?
Right. Yeah, there's lots. There are a lot of women who he has abused. And but then these guys, because they see him not as the Messiah, but as voicing the things that have been in their heads for so long about people of color, about LGBT people, about the state of the country, about you're being screwed by the Democrats because they're giving your money away, they're giving your jobs to these others, right? Well, you know, first of all, his people don't want to do the jobs that some of the others are taking, like picking fruit in the fields, and the other and some of his folks, I want to say to them, do you have your degree in neurobiology so you could become a doctor? I mean, you know, because that's what they also see, right? They also see people of color, not white-skinned people, being doctors. Oh, they took our jobs. No, they went to medical school, got a degree, and now they're taking care of your grandmother.
What kills me is the anti-intellectualism, the idea that the elites, the intellectuals are the bad ones.
And that started with George Bush.
The people that went to school and studied and learned how to open their minds and accept more things around them, they're the ones that are bad.
Right.
There's like a two different worlds, right? If Democrats talk about immigration reform, tariffs, infrastructure, that's bad.
Right.
But if Republicans talk about it, it's good. And you saw that just in receptivity to these, you know, for example, tariffs, you know, Biden's tariffs on Chinese EV imports, right? When that there's a lot of dissension in the ranks. Is that okay? There's a lot of conversation. Is that good? When Trump was wanting to do tariffs, everybody was all in. And, you know, I think that really shows that his party is really more about the personality than the policy.
Yeah. It's a cult.
Yes, it is a cult.
It's a cult of
personality. I would never fly a flag with a name of a candidate.
Right. But the thing is this,
on my front porch.
It's also
with giant muscles and a general's helmet and a gun. And
right, but it's also about policy. It's also about choice. It's also about LGBT rights. It's also about making sure that people who are not white don't get to vote. It's also about those issues. And that comes into the anti-intellectual part of it, and the Messiah part. But that's really that there's also policy here.
Right. And I understand that people are frustrated with politics in Washington. Siena College did a nationwide poll that found those on the far right and those on the far left agreed that it's Washington that in some ways is broken. I have a friend said, no, it's not. The Democrats are doing the right thing and the Republicans aren't. It's broken on the Republican side. But I think it's broken in terms of the money and the influence in politics. But the bottom line is it's easier to divide people and get them to shout at each other than to bring them together.
Especially with algorithms. We really have to look for language and issues that bring people together, and we haven't done a good job of that in the last 10 years.
And that's the whole other thing, isn't it, March? The whole idea of where we're going in media with coming deep fakes. We're already seeing it. AI, and then this idea of what the tabloids show us they do, which is capture and kill, and you know that's not the way the media should be operating.
We need an independent media, an independent judiciary.
We're back to the lockbox, WAMC.org. We're your independent choice. We've been here with Libby Post. We've been here with Jim Ketterer. He had to leave a bit early. Thank you, Jim, for being here. We, of course, have just heard from March Gallagher. I really appreciate you all participating. Let's keep the station alive, WAMC.org.